It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio this morning, Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. And Zaz Hollander, I welcome you on the phone. Welcome.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here with you and Terry.
Since this is the last Valley Edition of 2018, I thought we'd go back, and in fact, I had the opportunity to go back and look at and remind myself of all the things that have happened and what life was like in December of 2017. I thought we could begin with something which has carried through, actually starting in December of 2016, with the death of a young man by the name of Grunewald, and a action in 2017, and now an action in 2018. Maybe you could just, Zaz, talk a little bit about that timeline and where we are now with the Grunewald case.
Sure. So, yeah, that was a little over 2 years ago now that David Grunewald was killed. And since then, a lot has happened, although I think more slowly than people expected. Murder trials take a long time, however, especially when there is a ton of evidence and four separate murder defendants, four teenagers at the time who were charged with his murder. So at this point, as of yesterday, when Dominic Johnson was convicted of murder one and a number of other charges, there have now been two of the four defendants convicted for David Grunewald's murder. After lengthy trials, Eric Allmendinger, who was the first teenager to go to trial and provided kind of the most information to investigators, he was convicted in May, and now Dominic Johnson. Just yesterday, both juries in Palmer Superior Court deliberated for about a day in the Johnson trial and less than that in the Allmendinger trial. And they were both equally, tense verdicts with the Grunewald family, but also the family of both defendants had family members in court for part, if not all, of the proceedings.
Right, and can it continue on into 2019 because we still have the rest of the group to deal with.
That's right. There's two more defendants, Bradley Renfro and Austin Barrett. Their trials have not been scheduled. Their attorneys have a little more time till the end of January to file motions for change of venue, and also to try them separately. Mm. And so those motions haven't been filed yet. Renfro's attorney spent a number of days in court watching the Johnson trial and taking notes. And so it remains to be seen when those trials are going to be scheduled.
Okay.
So is there a chance they could plea bargain out those, or is it pretty good chance they will go to a full trial, all of them?
I figured that plea bargains would start after Allmendinger was convicted, but they didn't. And, I think that these two, Allmendinger and Johnson, were kind of the state's strongest cases. Renfro and Barrett, at least in terms of the stories that we've heard from court documents and court testimony, are, I wouldn't say accessories, but we know a little bit less about exactly what they did. Mm-hmm. There may be new evidence, obviously, that's going to be introduced in their trials.
Wow.
Well, let's swing to another topic that toward the end of 2017, as we rolled into 2018, caught a lot of people's attention, and it involved an Alaska State Senator and a member of the press, Nathaniel Hertz. I went back and I looked because some of these things come and go, and it was Senator Wilson who was accused of slapping the newspaper journalist who had asked a question, and there was another case also involving him, both of which were eventually dismissed. But this was a gentleman who works for the same organization you do. Zaz, any comment about that?
Well, sad to say, Matt no longer works for ABN. He went to APRN, so now he's on the radio.
Right. But at the time.
He did at the time, and I worked with Matt for several years, and he's a great reporter. And yeah, I have no doubt that David Wilson slapped him because Nat wouldn't make that up. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, at this point, if there's anything new to say about that situation, David Wilson and his slapping.
And that wasn't the only incident. There was an ethics charge against Representative Eastman too that took a long road and was finally settled too. So there was a lot of theatrics. Last legislature.
And of course, it's safe to and important to remind listeners, I think, that at the beginning of 2018, what we were looking at is the second half of the 30th legislature. Mm-hmm. We were also looking at a time, this was the fourth year of a governor's regime, and there were certainly some very interesting needs being presented. I took the time to look at oil prices because I thought that would be somewhat useful. And what we use as a reference is the West Texas Intermediate crude price. And in December of 2017, the price of oil per barrel was $60, and it ranged, in fact, up to $70 as the session went on. There were 542,000 barrels that came down the pipeline at that time. That was the rate. In 2018, the volume declined to 517, and the price right now is $46. That's $14 less. And I know that back in the beginning of 2018, there was concern about the low price. There was some joy, though, because the price continued to get higher as the year went on. We'll see what happens this year, but they're starting at a much lower point. The bright news in all of this, of course, is that there has been some success in the NPRA area of production, and it could be that the volume, because we need those two numbers to work out, what actually will come to the state of Alaska, the volume of oil produced as well as the price. And the volume looks like it may be going up. But I thought that would be interesting information because right now we're starting with the legislature in a different situation than last year. Last year, you knew who was going to be in charge. You had committee people in place. They were going into their second year of being that. Alaska's legislature uses a two-year system. And there was some sense of how this could work. This year, as we all, I think, know, the legislature is still trying to figure out who's going to be appointing people in the House to those positions that govern committee structures. Terry, any comment?
Yeah, they're getting off to a shaky start, but it'll be full bore after the beginning of the year. And there is a court case out there about the power a little bit on a race in Fairbanks that will decide to some degree. But it does sound, just from reading some of the blogs that are going on and Twitter and a couple other sources, there is some coalition building happening. Whether there'll be enough of one, it's hard to say. But they need to get it together. And there are also some new faces down there who have to find housing. They have to hire staff. That's all. Until it's determined who's actually going to be in charge of the House, they don't really have their staff in committees. They don't really have their staff appointed. So it's getting to that. It's not to that panic stage yet, but it's going to be after the first of the year.
So before we jump to the election, which was a major event here in 2018, I had another set of numbers that I thought was interesting. So let's see how you reflect about these. This is marijuana taxes. Okay, in 2017, there were 44 taxpayers that paid a total of about $1.7 million in taxes. In 2018, to this point, there are 102. Somewhat larger number, that have paid $8.7 million. And the real question is, where are the majority of these taxpayers from?
Well, they're not in Palmer.
They're not in Palmer.
They can't.
Palmer has one taxpayer in Palmer. I'm just saying, I have to delve into why it's listed. There are 9 in Wasilla, 1 in Palmer, but which community in the state of Alaska, Zaz, do you think might have the majority of taxpayers?
In the entire state of Alaska?
Yes. It's just a quiz here, throwing out.
I mean, popular.
I would assume it's Anchorage.
Anchorage is a good choice, but it's number two.
Fairbanks?
So, Fairbanks. Fairbanks. 20 taxpayers in Fairbanks, 17 in
that
Anchorage.
That surprised me.
Right.
The Palmer one is a little puzzling because there's an ordinance against it, but it may just be a mailing address, too. But physical address can't be within the city limits. It could be Palmer, the greater Palmer area, I suppose, but not within the city unless I've missed something.
Right,
there.
And that's what we have to do. That gives us a task for 2019 to check on what's happening in the borough with marijuana outside of the city here, which has prohibited.
Well, and you have a new governor who may or may not have the same position on marijuana as the last governor, the revenue certainly is going to be welcomed with the amount of revenue that they're not getting from oil. But I'm not sure you have the same sentiment that you may have had by the outgoing governor. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Well, maybe we should take a look at a few more statistics as well then. We know that the population of the state of Alaska back in 2010, as a result of the census, was about 710,000. So the question is, what kind of estimates do we have for the statewide population of the state of Alaska as we roll from 2018 into 2019? Has it gone up, stayed the same? What do you think? Terry?
Wow. I don't know, because I'm worried about what the questions will be in the census and how they're doing the census, what I've read so far, a lot different than they did it before. So are they really going to be capturing, if it's same capture? Matsu, I think, has just by, the school district having gone down a little bit this year, they always call that the mini census. I don't know that it's gone down census-wise in Matsu, but I don't know that we've had the growth that we've seen in the other years. I think overall, by 2020, that's a couple of years. I don't think it's going to be off the record in growth, but that's just my own feeling. What about you, Zaz?
Boy, I know that there with the recession, there was some flight. Matsu only grew a little.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a really marginal uptick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, at the present time, the estimates by those people who make these kind of estimates without the benefit of a census suggest that the population is about statewide 738,000, so slightly up from what it had been before. However, there are two events here that it might be worthwhile looking at. One is tourism. Tourism has had a boom year, continuing to increase and lend itself to the economy, actually doing reasonably well in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's another event that has happened, and that is that back at the beginning of 2018, it looked like, I could use the term moribund to apply to the Pebble Mine. Well, it has arisen in a smaller version and looking toward perhaps a more receptive climate with the change in administration at the state level. But the mine seems to be back in play, and we still have considerable opposition. A number of people who've dealt with this one way or the other. But one of the things that happened, and this will help us slide into the elections that happened this year, is that there was initiative number one on the ballot that was soundly defeated, and it had to do with salmon habitat. And some have looked at it and have said, well, that is one of the signs of a strong support for protection for salmon in the state, but perhaps not as much as some strong support for resource development. Terry, reaction?
Well, I think Alaskans are in love with their mega projects, and it's not unusual that these projects, how many times has the Kinnick Bridge arisen and gone away, and the Waitana Dam, and we kind of like our mega projects, and they don't always go away. There's usually enough life support on them that they're not truly gone. They're just kind of existing until the next political wind blows their way. So, will it be a scaled-down model? Will it really ever take flight? I don't know. I mean, they're the opposition can't be calculated just by that ballot measure. There was a lot of misinformation with that ballot measure, as there normally is with ballot measures. So I'm not sure that's the complete guide on it. The pathways to that type of development seem to be a little more open, with the federal administration and the state administration both be seemingly on the pro-development. But there are significant challenges that will come to that, and it's not something that's ironed out in a year or a couple years. Those barriers don't come down right away, and the effects of that don't go away. So I think that remains to be seen, but we do love our mega projects.
True enough. Well, let's turn to the elections. There were three ballots that happened this year, one in August, then the locals in October, and then, of course, general elections in November. The local elections produced some change, some surprising changes in local bodies. The school board lost a member who had been there for some time, Debbie Rutherford. There was a change on the assembly and basically also a change in the city of Palmer's council faces, where a longtime member, Richard Best, was defeated by a newcomer to the political process from a business background here in the city. So there were some changes, but in some respects not huge. I don't think the general opinion seemed to be about that. However, at the state level, there was another story. As we went through the primaries and so on, and it settled out that indeed Michael Dunleavy was going to be the Republican candidate for governor, things got awful, kind of messy, as a three-way race became a two-way race. Maybe Terry, just talk a little bit about Governor Walker and his then running mate, Byron Mallott.
Well, you know, in politics, timing is everything, and a three-way race rarely ends up well for anybody. It's certainly not a majority thing when the voters are split out so many ways on that. And there's going to be probably years of woulda, coulda, shoulda. We also have extraordinary races. We have one that's not settled yet in Fairbanks on a one-vote ballot. We have, I think, still the only state, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that had a write-in for the last term for Senator Murkowski. That's never happened before. So we're sort of accustomed to unusual races. And so, you know, I don't think it should surprise us that we had an unusual governor race, that's for sure.
Right. And with the lieutenant governor being replaced at the last minute because the governor had felt that he had committed an act which was not criminal, but violated an ethical standard. And then, of course, shortly thereafter, the governor backing out of the race in favor of Mark Begich, who is a Democratic challenger. Then that race went on for the remaining weeks it had, and Michael Dunleavy, who had started running probably when he had resigned from the Senate, the Alaska State Senate, because he was not in agreement with the majority party's position, and basically began running for governor. He prevailed and has been sworn in as governor, which leads us to, of course, the more recent questions that are associated with his administration. The biggest one, I think, coming out is the request for a large number of at-will employees to submit their letters of resignation, or in a more positive sense, their letters of appreciation of the governor's probable direction in his administration. Zaz, any comments about that?
I haven't been following that as closely as other reporters at the newspaper, but certainly it's an unprecedented time in terms of asking state employees to resign.
Right. So the end result, of course, has been that a number of people have left government service, have been replaced, and there's a story there that we don't have time enough to get into, as individuals have been placed into positions with perhaps not the the classic or typical amount of vetting in having been involved in lower echelons of government service. Terry, any comments?
Yeah, well, it's not unlike what's going on in the national level, too. What's up is down, what's down is up. And, you know, I'm sort of a proponent of shaking the system up a little bit. But, you know, you also have to maintain a business in the services of the state. And, again, these things just take time to play out. And I just don't think we're going to know until the governor actually puts out his budget. There's always kind of a left-behind budget the way it's our system is set up that but he gets another shot at that, and I expect there to be significant changes in that budget that will really reflect on our healthcare system, hopefully not, but possibly senior services and other things that the state normally is supportive of. So I think the budget is sort of their moral document. And what kind of buy-in he gets, what happens with the permanent fund? I mean, there certainly was a lot of campaign promises made about what we would get paid back or Alaskans should be paid back for the permanent fund adjustment. But now all of a sudden, instead of the budget being set on $70 a barrel oil and at one time $110 a barrel oil, we're down in the, as you said this morning, Mike, 50s. So it's going to be interesting how all that's reconciled.
Well, then let's turn to, of course, the big event, the earthquake. As I look back over 2018, and perhaps many people similarly, I think it's appropriate to say that people have long been able to toss off. Yes, we have a lot of earthquakes, little ones here in Alaska. And of course, we had the big one back in 64. But now references seem to be a little more personal, and of course, we're still seeing the recovery. The list of damaged homes, damaged facilities, damaged roads, et cetera, is continuing to grow. There's the reality seeping in of, okay, if I've had some damage, what do I do to fund this repair? And realizing that there may be some monies available from government sources, but very often a person finds they do not have what's referred to as earthquake insurance, or if so, there's a large amount that has to be paid. So there are a lot of individual stories that are far more powerful than has been true, I think, over the recent time with earthquakes. Zaz, I'd have to ask, how has your own circumstance turned out? Because I know that you were looking at some interruption in the flow of water from your well.
More importantly, we had a big shaker yesterday.
Oh, that's right, 4.9.
Yeah, we did. My well is still not back to normal, but it kind of pales in comparison, I think, to hundreds of people with damage to their homes. A number of them in Eagle River or Chugiak, where they can't live in their homes, and there are still more yellow tags being added to buildings. So we're still inventorying the damage from this earthquake, especially the hardest shaking does appear to be Eagle River, Chugiak, although we obviously up here in that suit didn't escape either.
Has anybody talked about the Willow Community Center or any of the buildings in the Willow area? That's been pretty quiet from that area, and that's pretty close to Big Lake.
Yeah, I haven't. I kind of split time up there now, and I haven't heard of any specific reports of damage. There was some damage to the ice rink up there next to the elementary school, but I believe that was cleared a little while ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
One of the outcomes from the event occurring, of course, is an opportunity for emergency services as well as individuals to review their plans for what to do when you have an earthquake. And I know there's been a considerable look at improvements, how things worked. In many respects, emergency services performed as they needed to. There were some concerns about the way in which information was being provided to the general public, and I suspect that there will be some improvements in that direction. So that's a whole range of stuff that's happened over 2018, but things continue to happen, and we have a few minutes left. Saz, I know that you've just had a little bit of information about a new event that involves a single home. Would you like to share some of that at this point?
Sure. It's not Valley specific at all, but I guess it's an issue that we could all deal with that has happened up here in the past. There was apparently a natural gas explosion that destroyed a home in Anchor Point last night and closed the Sterling Highway for about 6 hours. Two-story home just obliterated. Nobody inside at the time at this point. And no injuries reported, but a number of other people who live in the area are also reporting damage to their homes because, I mean, the roof from this house blew like 150, 200 feet across the road. And so at this point, again, no injuries are being reported, and it's unclear exactly what happened. But the preliminary cause is some kind of a gas explosion, at least according to the troopers.
So was the house on natural gas or was it propane?
NSTAR was involved.
NSTAR was involved.
Gas.
Wow.
There have been some propane-related explosions up here over the period of five, 10 years ago. Hmm.
And so maybe that's the end note that we need, a reminder that during the immediate hours after the earthquake, there was a request out there, if you smelled gas, to contact NSTAR, if you were on natural gas, to have that looked at. And this is a reminder that we look around, and if you're in an area that's served by natural gas, it works. Is it dangerous? Well, we're not seeing any homes blow up, et cetera, until one does. And when one does, you can see the effect is dramatic. And so just a reminder to people, it's perhaps still a time when there might have been some damage that has gradually made a leak happen around your house. If you smell natural gas, by all means, contact NSTAR and have it looked at.
Oh. Was this house it was on the highway or was it in a neighborhood?
I'm still trying to get my information from the
Wow.
It sounds like it closed the highway, so it must have been near the highway.
Wow.
Okay. Well,
glad no one was hurt.
I want to thank Saz Hollander for calling in today and sharing as we took a retrospective through 2018. Thank you, Saz.
Well, of course. Happy New Year, everybody.
Right. And I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in and doing the same. Walk with us through 2018.
Bring on the new year.
Yes, we can do that. And next week we'll be back with another edition, a fresh edition of 2019 for Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.